What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Whether you're hunting the back 40 or chasing game deep in the backcountry, the all-new Razor Guide Pack from Outdoor Edge has it all. Coming in at only 12 ounces and in a premium wax canvas roll pack for compact storage and travel, the Razor Guide Pack is 7 blades in total, including a 5-inch replaceable blade folding knife, a 3-inch replaceable blade caping knife, and the flip and zip saw for wood or bone. For more information, visit OutdoorEdge.com.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
Starting a business can seem like a daunting task, unless you have a partner like Shopify. They have the tools you need to start and grow your business. From designing a website to marketing to selling and beyond, Shopify can help with everything you need. There's a reason millions of companies like Mattel, Heinz, and Allbirds continue to trust and use them. With Shopify on your side, turn your big business idea into... Sign up for your $1 per month trial at shopify.com/special offer.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to another episode of the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson. And today we are going to be talking about hunting gear and equipment. I know, shocking, right? But what this is, first off, I'm going to say that Aaron Blysey of the Fall Podcast has been a regular guest on the Nine Finger Chronicles for, the last 6 or 7 weeks now. And so this episode that I've done, I'm calling it the Fall Sessions. This was like the fifth one that we've done, but it's about gear, hunting gear and equipment. So I just wanted to put this one on the Hunting Gear Podcast feed as well. Let everybody listen to it just because it's gear related. Hopefully you guys enjoy it. I'm going to recommend going to the Nine Finger Chronicles feed and listening to all of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcasts, period, all of them. No, but the ones that I've done with Aaron, really fun, really exciting. I had a blast recording these episodes. And so I just wanted to share it with you guys today. Before we kick off this episode, though, I want to remind everybody that this podcast is brought to you by Hunt Stand. If you guys are in the market for a hunting app, you got to check out Hunt Stand. So first off, go to huntstand.com, read up on all the functionality, read up on things like digital imagery and how much they update it. It's like a month, every month they update brand new satellite imagery. It has all the standard functions like landowners, property boundaries, public private land lines, things like that. But then they have recently introduced something called a Pro Whitetail platform. And if you're a serious bow hunter who likes to hunt, or just a serious hunter who likes to hunt the rut, this is definitely the upgrade for you. And it costs a little bit more, but it's still very affordable. So go check out huntstand.com. It's that time of year, man, where we got to start putting a plan in place, start thinking about our tree stand locations, what the wind's going to do in those scenarios. And I love hopping on Hunt Stand and figuring that out. So huntstand.com. That's it for today. We got a new partner joining us in July, the 1st of July. So be aware of that. And outside of that, man, let's have a good rest of your day. Have a good rest of your week. Have a good weekend, month, year, life. And we'll talk to you next week. 3, 2, 1. All right. This is the fifth installment of the fall sessions right here on the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. And I'm back with Aaron, the host of the fall podcast. That's why we're calling it the fall sessions. So, how you been, dude?
Good, man. Good. Good long weekend. Went to the lake, had some fun, went to a niece's birthday party. And now here we are. It's tack week here in Michigan. So total archery challenge. You know, as we're recording, this is going to happen in 2 days. So I'll be heading up north for that. And it's going to be a lot of fun, man.
Awesome. All right. You love baseball, right?
I do. Yeah.
Actually, let me back up. I've never been to a tack event. What's it like? Is it worth going to at least one in your life?
100%. I've been to, 3 or 4 now, I think. But it's a lot of fun as far as like, every year it gets bigger, I feel like. And I've only been to the Michigan one, but
yeah,
there's so many like-minded people. And the cool thing about it is you don't even have to go shoot. Like, there's a whole bunch of vendors there. So you can go walk around their vendors and just kind of, you know, talk to whoever might be there. Exodus might be there, or Latitude, or Hoyt, or whoever, you know.
Yeah.
And you can, a lot of those people are running show specials too, so you can buy stuff there. But I'll tell you what, even if you want to go and just register and shoot like the practice range and stuff like that, it's a lot of fun. I will say, you know, I think I've done 3 now. I will say it's like the nostalgia's kind of wore off for me. Like going up there this weekend, I work for Latitude, so I'll be working the booth. Like I really don't care if I shoot or not. Like it's just... It's not something I'm like, oh, I got to go do it. Like, for me, I've been there. I've shot the courses. Now I'm like, ah, I just kind of want to go and hang out with the people. You know what I mean? And just kind of and talk. So
right.
That's where I'm at.
Yeah, I've put some thought into going to one of the closer ones here. And I think the closest one is either in, man, it's going to be, I think the Michigan one is probably one of the closest ones for me.
But, really?
Yeah. I don't even know where they have their events these days, but yeah, I mean, it seems like fun, but like, I'll be honest. If someone said to me, hey, all expense paid to a tack event, I would probably just go to watch and hang because my bow needs a new string and I'm not even close to getting it set up. So I need to take it into the shop, get a new string put on it and then start shooting again. So.
For sure. It's one thing that I think everybody should do at least once and then just kind of, you know, if you want to do more then do more, but it is a good event. It is really cool. And like I said, up in Michigan, there's going to be other podcasters there, but there's going to be a lot of like, you know, I'm in Michigan, so that's where my core listener group is. So that's what a lot of people like to hang out, come by the booth and talk and, you know, kind of meet us and get to know us. And then I'm going to be doing some podcasts up there too. So I also look at it as like a way to get content done, you know, and maybe get 4 or 5 podcasts in the bank. So I look at it that way now.
Yep. Absolutely. All right. So now baseball. All right.
Yeah.
Our little league team, man, we got in the last week, we played a game, I believe on Wednesday. Then we had, a game on Wednesday. Then we had a tournament where we played 3 games. So that's 4 games in like a 4 or 5 day period. And so what's cool is that our team is starting to come out of its shell. Some of the kids anyway. And so like my son is one of them. He was not doing very well right at the beginning, but now he's comfortable in the batter's box. And so now he's starting to hit. Same thing. We had one kid who's I feel if any kid's going to put one over the fence this year as an 8-year-old, it's going to be this kid. And so, he's starting to swing the bat and he's feeling comfortable in the box. And so we had, have you ever seen the movie Moneyball with Brad Pitt?
Oh yeah.
Yep.
Love it.
And so that whole entire movie is based off of sabermetrics, the statistical, long story short, if you haven't seen the movie, what sabermetrics is a guy came up and he's putting together a baseball team based off of nothing but statistics, not, hey, how's this guy look? You know, how hard of a worker is he? It has nothing to do with like a gut feeling. It's all 100% based off of statistics. And so, I hope nobody who is on the team listens to this, but our top 3 batters in the order were number 1 and number 2 in strikeouts. And so I looked up how to calculate and how to make a batting order based off of sabermetrics. And so now hopefully coming out of this tournament, the next tournament, and this is not up to me, it's up to the coach. I'm an assistant, so I put it together. And hopefully we can get some of our better kids, better hitters, and kids with better on base percentage higher up because our 8th batter has like a .685 on base percentage. So he's either hitting or he's getting walked. And he has like a 4 something batting average right now. And so, but he was 8th. I'm like, we want this kid to be on base as much as humanly possible, or to be at bat as much as humanly possible. So, so our team played really well this weekend. We had an example where the kid with the most strikeouts was the last batter of the game with people in running position. And so it didn't work out, but we played awesome. This weekend we lost to some really good teams. We beat an okay team. And so, anyway, baseball, I'm starting to fall back in love with baseball and just like the statistics of it. Like I love looking at batting average and digging into how'd this guy get on base or what's his slugging percentage and things like that.
No, I agree. And that's why I love baseball. Like, we're big Detroit Tigers fans. So like when we go to a game, I'm the guy that still to this day, I'll buy the book, that you can keep the score and everything. And I write the scores in and all that in the games. And, to kind of go back to your point about like, you have a kid lower in the batting average. Now this is not going to like really mean much when they're that young, but when you start getting into like varsity baseball in high school, then into college, typically hitters later in the lineup are going to see more fastballs.
Yeah.
So like you might have a kid that might be hitting 7, 8, or 9 that has a really good on base percentage or average, because typically they're going to see more fastballs lower in the lineup. And then also you can hide kids, you can hide guys behind hitters. What I mean? And typically the rule of thumb is your third hitter is your best hitter on your team, typically, so it's that whole side of things is really cool. And then for me watching a game, like I love dissecting counts. Like, this guy's like, when I watch a game on TV, it's like, it's a, you know, 1-2 count. Like, what's this pitcher going to throw? Yeah. You know, what would I throw? Where would I? And I like to try to validate my thought process and what that pitcher does.
Yep.
So I just love baseball, man. Oh, it makes you think constantly.
Yeah.
And that's what I love about it.
And these kids, they get so worked up. They get so worked up when they strike out or they, you know, they make an error or something like that. And it's strikeouts mostly. But, you know, you got a kid that's batting 500. No, actually, he's batting like 790 this year on our team. So he's almost automatic. Wow. He's almost automatic. And he'll cry when I'm like, and so we go with the, dude, you would be in the Hall of Fame if you had, you would hold all the records if you had this batting average in the major leagues. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that motivates him, or at least tells him to stop crying. I didn't realize until this year coaching kids that it is necessary as a baseball player to have a very short memory and be able to get over whatever problem you just had so that the next pitch you're back on point.
Yep. 100%. And like, you know, the whole adage and the whole saying goes, it's like, you know, in baseball, you can fail 70% of the time and you'll probably be a Hall of Famer.
Exactly.
You know, anybody that hits around 300 as a career. I mean, I was looking at stats the other night just because I was going down a rabbit hole, but Tony Gwynn. Mm-hmm. Tony Gwynn is arguably one of the best hitters to ever play the game.
Yeah.
His career batting average was like 333, like something like that, career. And I'm like, that is ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's him almost failing 70% of the time.
Yeah.
And he's considered the best hitter ever.
Yeah. And he's got, he's got like 4,000 hits or something like that.
4,000. I don't think plus. I don't know if he's got four. He's got at least 3,000, I think. I don't know what he has for total hits.
Yeah. Yeah. Stud. But in the whitetail world, if you say I'm only going to be successful, well, for me, being successful 33% of the time would mean that I only shoot $3 every 10 years. And to me, that's not good. Like, that's not good.
Nope.
But based off of tag filling statistics, that's I think what's the success rate for some of these elk draws out, or for some of these elk and deer hunts across the nation, it's like 10%. Like, success rate on some of these, filling some of these tags is 10%. So
something like that.
If you compare it to that, then you're doing pretty good.
Yeah. So right here, I'm looking at Tony Gwynn's stats. He was a 338 career hitter. He had 3,141 hits. So for anybody that's not a baseball person, if you can reach 3,000 hits in the major leagues, that is like astronomical. Not everybody does that. There's a fraction of people that do that. So
who's above him? Do you have that in front of you?
I'm going to say Pete Rose is probably
number one
above him. Yeah. Let me look.
Of course, for those who are listening, we are going on a huge, down a huge rabbit hole right now that has nothing to do with whitetails.
So there's a lot of people, or not, I shouldn't say a lot, but there's quite a few people ahead of him. So Pete Rose has 4,206 hits. He's got the most. Then Ty Cobb, 4,189. Hank Aaron, Stan Musial, Trish Speaker, Derek Jeter's got 3,400. Honus Wagner, Carl Yastrzemski, Albert Pujols, Paul Molitor. You know, you got.
They're all over 3,000.
Yes.
Okay.
So where the line stops is Roberto Clemente had 3,000. He was number 33 on the list. And Tony Gwynn's number 21. Okay. So, I mean, Pete Rose arguably is probably the best hitter, but obviously there's an asterisk by his name because of his gambling stuff. But, I mean, God, 4,256 hits, Dan. That's ridiculous.
Man, and that's – I mean, let the dude in the Hall of Fame, man. I mean, he didn't gamble. He didn't throw any games. He gambled on his own team.
Yeah.
So, whatever. Anyway, you have some information about deer teeth and aging deer. I want to hear this story.
This is hot off the press, Dan. Okay, hot. I mean, literally, I just got this right before we get on this call. And so, you know, that like aging deer is always, you know, in the world of whitetails, mm-hmm. like aging deer, I feel like is like way up there.
Yep.
You know, like, and I fall in this bucket too, as far as, you know, people like, oh, that was a mature buck. Mm-hmm. That he's 4 years old, 5 years old, mm-hmm. 6 years old. I'm here to tell you, and this might be a hot take, and I don't think, unless you have pictures of you a deer that has a notch in his ear or whatnot, I don't think anybody has an idea of what age is, unless you literally watch that deer grow up mm-hmm. with some sort of marking. Mm-hmm. And the reason being, okay, so I sent 3 sets of teeth in to Deer Age, okay, and I just got them back. Now, I shot in 2021. I shot a deer in Illinois, and I'm gonna give you some weights because I have all the weights and everything on these deer. So, okay. This deer weighed. Let me look at this real quick. He weighed 250 pounds on the hoof. Okay. We're talking about Central Illinois deer. He scored 145. He grossed at 145. He was a 10-point, great-looking deer. But, it, you know, when you look at him, it's like what I thought he was a 4-year-old. For sure thought he was a 4-year-old. Comes back to 3.5. Okay? And I'm like, right there. Like, he is – and those 3.5 to 4.5-year-old deer are very hard to, like – like, that's the line for mm-hmm. me to be like, man, he could be 3, he could be 4 or whatnot. I thought he was 4, you know, with all of his, you know, features and everything. And he weighed 250 pounds. It's a big deer and everything. I'm like, oh, he came back at 3.5. So that was one thing. The next one, Ohio, I shot one in 2021, Ohio. He scored 170 as a typical 10, okay, as gross scored. And he weighed 240 pounds on the hoof. He was 11 point. He had some great mass. Big deer. Came back at 4.5. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, man, I figured he was 4. Thought he might be 5. But I figured he was at least going to be 4. So that one really didn't surprise me too much. So the one that surprised me was this one. Last year, I shot a buck in Michigan. He scored 132 grossed, but he had 2 broken brows. Mm-hmm. And I figured he'd be a low 140s deer because you could tell they were completely broken. So this deer weighed 220 pounds on the hoof, gross scored 132 as is. This deer was a big deer. Mm-hmm. This deer's got great mass. And I try not to look at the antlers and the mass and stuff like that and try to discern an age from that. Like, it's just, I try to look at their chest, their body, all that stuff. This deer is one of the bigger deer that I've seen in this area, body-wise and everything, and especially antler-wise. And he came back at 3.5. Mm-hmm. And I was a little upset, mm-hmm. but I was like, man, that told me right there that, like, we just don't know. We do not know, because you see, I'm telling you, Dan, if you would have saw this deer in a bean field or in a field of hunting in Michigan or whatever, you'd be like, got to be a 4-year-old, mm-hmm. you know, like it looks like a 4-year-old. He just did.
Yeah.
And he's 3.5. And I'm like, you know, I hear a lot of guys saying, you know, especially Michigan guys saying, like, they think that there's more 4-year-olds than we actually think. I think you're wrong mm-hmm. in my area. I literally, you could have put a gun to my head and be like, this deer's 4.
Yeah.
You know, so I was a little upset about that. You know what I mean? Because yeah. It's like, you work so hard and you're trying to kill. And he was a top 10% of the bucks that I have an opportunity at. But I'm like, what do I got to do to get a 4-year-old?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just don't think they're as prevalent around here as people think.
So I have in my office here, I have who's that artist, what's his name, Ryan Kirby. Yep. I have the you might have it too, the poster of a 1.5-year-old next to a 2-year-old, and it kind of breaks down all their characteristics, right? Of yep. And I think he got some of that stuff from the NDA, Okay. So I'm looking at it, and there is very little, there's very little difference between a 3-year-old and a 4-year-old from just body size, right? Now you take it even a step further into a 5-year-old category, and I'm just basing this right off the artwork here. Maybe there's a little bit more sway in the back. Maybe the gut is a little bigger. But then again, I've seen 100, and I'm assuming he's a 5 or a 6-year-old, huge body, no antlers, right? A 125-inch 10-pointer, right? And so just like humans, there's so many different variables into how big they get based off of their diet. You know, if you're going to base it strictly off teeth wear, what about a deer that eats a ton of grass and clover and not necessarily acorns or you know, corn, shell corn? Mm-hmm. And so if you have just a softer food that these deer are eating throughout the entire year, their teeth aren't going to wear as much. If you got a deer who he only eats corn and he only eats acorns throughout the year and he, you know, he's heavy into that, then his teeth are going to be way more worn down than, mm-hmm. let's say, a deer that only eats grass, or, you know, because they have favorites. You know, they're going to go to what's plentiful at that year. And in states like, let's just say, South Dakota, Nebraska, on the western side of the Missouri River, those deer are eating a lot of grass. And so their body size will never be as big as a deer here in the Midwest that has all that starch corn and things like that. So there's so many variables that, and to top it all off, genetics. And like I told you on the shipwreck episode on your podcast, shipwreck was a 8-9, you know, he was 8-9-10 years old when he was 10 years old when he was shot. And I have documentation of almost every single year. And Sam Calora, the guy who shot him, he is a deer breeder, so he knows about deer. He says he's probably a 10-year-old buck, okay? He weighed, I want to say, between 200 and 225 pounds, okay? And so genetically, he was a small-bodied deer. And if you would have taken the rack off of him and put a 120-inch rack on him, this deer is now not getting looked at all, because he has a small body. He had some characteristics of an older deer, but just in a smaller package. And so, yeah, unless I agree with you 100%, like even me, I say, oh, the deer downstairs are 4 years old, or this one's a 2-year-old, or this one's a 5 or 6-year-old. Nobody really knows. I mean, nope. I don't have trail camera pictures of multiple years of, you know, like 3 or 4 years of all those deer. So it's a guess. And that's what everybody's doing, is they're taking their best guess. And
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah. And it's, you know, that deer I was talking about, the Michigan deer, I should grab him real quick. I got him right here. But a buddy of mine hunts a farm close to where I shot him, and actually found that deer's shed the year before I killed him. Mm-hmm. And he gave me the shed, and the shed to me screams a 3-year-old, mm-hmm. like just by the antlers. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now I just told you a little bit ago, I try not to look at the antlers and judge a deer off age on that. But when you look,
your little one grew 3 inches overnight. Adorable. Also expensive. Sell their pint sized pieces on Depop and list them in minutes with no selling fees, because somewhere a dad refuses to pay full price for the clothes his kids will outgrow tomorrow, and he's ready to buy your son's entire wardrobe right now. Consider your future growth spurt budget secured. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
Got like a 3-year-old. What people say they're 3-year-olds, and I look at that shed, I'm like, man, that's a 3-year-old. Yeah. And then I look at his antlers now as they're sitting there, I'm like, hey, he's a 4-year-old. Like, yeah. You know, as a skull cap, I'm like, he's got great mass. And so it was a little upsetting, but it was also to the point where I'm just like, it just reiterates the fact that, like, it doesn't matter the size of the antlers. you just don't know.
You don't know.
Like, you don't know unless you've seen that deer grow up, mm-hmm. you know?
Yep, absolutely. So, I'm looking at a pair of sheds right now in my office that I found like in 2009, 8 or 9, so a long time ago. And I'm telling you, the pedicles on that thing are the size of maybe a quarter, or like somewhere in between a nickel and a quarter, okay? And I would say there's no brows on them, just little bumps for brows. But we're looking at 115-inch, I guess it would be an 8, because they're just little bumps for brows. But with the pedicles that are very tiny. And so I look at that and I go, that deer genetically is gifted, because that's the pedicle size is like a 1-year-old or a 2-year-old. So mm-hmm. potentially the first set of antlers that this buck ever grew was 115 inches, 110 inches. It's nuts.
Yeah. And that'll be another thing. The first buck I shot this year, girl scored at 111 mm-hmm. and he's got like a 7-inch, like, double main beam. Okay. So, you know, not really massive. I honestly think he is probably a 2-year-old. I had a little ground shrinkage when I walked up to him. I thought he was a year older, bigger than I thought, but I wasn't, you know, I was happy with the deer. I'd shoot the deer again, honestly,
yeah.
But I'm going to send his teeth in and I'm going to be really interested to see if he comes back at a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he does, that means the same thing as like that deer's first rack. He's mid-teens and grew a double main beam. Yeah. You know what I mean? I got to imagine he's going to be at least a 2-year-old, but I could be completely wrong. That deer could be 3.
Yeah.
You know? And if that's the case, geez, I have no clue how to age deer.
Yeah. So it's one of those things where I always say I'm going for a 4-year-old. But mm-hmm. when you really boil it down and break it down, like, I'm going for a deer that at that exact moment looks good enough for me to shoot. And that yep. has to do with body size and antler size. It's not 100% mm-hmm. based off of body. So,
amen.
You know, even I guess I'm a little bit of a hypocrite.
Yeah. I think we all are. Yeah. And you know, how many times do you, after a sit, you talk to a buddy, it's like, man, I saw, he's a big deer, man. He's probably 4-year-old. And I'm like, really? You got to check yourself. Like,
yeah.
Is he though? Like,
yeah.
Is he?
And one thing, here's another interesting thing. So you see a doe group come out and they just look really lean. And they, you know, some, even a mature doe doesn't carry the body weight like any buck will. You take mm-hmm. What I'm going to guess is a mature doe. They come through and a spike, a yearling or a 2-year-old comes through. They're bigger already than the oldest mature doe. They're already yeah. bigger. So they stand next aside and it gives you a little perspective and just to say, geez, man, it's so hard to tell what, you know, what's accurate.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yeah. Oh, and yeah. by the way, I had a buddy during shotgun season one year. They did a deer drive and he shot a spike and it weighed 250 or 270, a spike buck, yearling, 2-year-old wow. or something like that. Gigantic body.
Wow.
It was nuts.
Yeah. yeah. The days of 200-pound deer, like for Michigan, I'm going to speak Michigan.
Yeah.
Like back in the day when you'd get a somebody killed a 200-pound deer like on the hoof, it's like, wow,
yeah,
that's a big deer. Now, dude, I would have to, like, I weigh all my deer. I would have to say in the last 4 or 5 years the deer I've killed in Michigan have all been over 200 pounds and respectively like yeah. 250, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the way it is now.
So I will say this, in 2012 I think that if I had to guess what the outcomes would be based off of me sending things in, I'm guessing the deer I shot in 2012 is going to potentially be 2012 or 2018, but I think it's going to be 2012. That deer had, I was at the time probably 240 pounds, and I'm sitting behind this thing. And just took two guys to the amount of time it took to, and I never officially weighed it, But I'm confident that deer was over 300 pounds. And so to this day, that deer was the biggest bodied animal that I'd ever shot. And that, like, 300 pounds is huge. It made That's me look giant. Small in the picture. So
giant.
Yeah. And I shot him in the nostril and the arrow went down his throat. And I don't know if you ever saw that video, but it went down the throat and a blade just opened up his neck and it hit its carotid. And he just was, or his jugular, and it just, it was over in like 60. It was like murder scene. It was gnarly. Wow. It was gnarly. And that was that chest shot that we talked about in the last episode. Yep. But he saw my bottom stick, he followed it up, and right as I released the arrow, pulled the trigger on the release, he dropped, but his head stayed up looking at me. And so instead of hitting him in the chest, I hit him in his nose. But his head was up, so he basically swallowed the arrow. It was insane. And you know, I don't want to brag about bad shots, but I mean, he died really quickly.
Oh, you hit that artery, they're gonna die quick.
His artery, his throat, so everything just tore him up. And he didn't last too long. So all right. Anything else about the age of those deer before we move on?
No, man. That's all I really wanted to share.
All right, perfect. That was interesting. Now, the remainder of this, you know, we've been BSing here for 30 minutes, and it's kind of good that we did, because I don't see the rest of this conversation lasting too terribly long, but hell, it could, because we're kind of gear nerds ourselves. Mm-hmm. We've talked about... Let's kind of cover what we've talked about. We've talked about terrain, how deer move through terrain.
Yep.
We've talked about
mature deer.
Like, yep. And mature deer behavior.
Yep. Moment of truth.
Okay. And a whole bunch of other things that revolve around how deer use terrain, how mature deer are different from young deer, and then the moment of truth. And now, so we're in the moment of truth, right? And for me, and I'm guessing you're going to agree, that the moment of truth becomes less of an issue when you're confident in your equipment. I know it does for me. If I'm not thinking, the best quote I ever heard from someone was, if you're not thinking about your gear when you're out hunting, you have the right gear. For example, when I go out west, I know my boots are great and working the way I want them to, because I'm not thinking about my feet and I'm not thinking about my boots. I'm just going. And so let me ask you kind of a question. When it comes to your gear, how do you make your decisions on what to purchase?
Well, this, honestly, this happened by a lot of trial and error, mm-hmm. and a lot of thinking I needed to follow trends back in the day. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like the trend bug really hit me around 2010, 11, 12, 13 in those areas. Dude, I was buying a new bow in like middle of October, November, mm-hmm. and putting a new rest on it, new arrows, new broadheads, because I saw someone else doing it.
Yeah.
And that couldn't have been, like, it was the worst thing to do, you know? So, and I struggled like 2011, 12 or 10 and 11. I struggled mightily just because I didn't have confidence in my gear. Yeah. And honestly, now that I've gotten a little more mature and everything, and when I'm going into something or thinking about something, like there's a lot of things I take into consideration, but the one thing is how can I use this piece of gear and not have to worry about it is my first thing. Like, you know, I switched to fixed blade broadheads 2 years ago. I don't want to have to worry about it. I want to be able to put it on there and it's going to perform. Yep. And that's what it does. Yep. You know, the other thing is, like, I've went as far as, you know, I use a QAD rest. Mm-hmm. Okay. And a lot of people, me included, I used to tie the cord just right on the cable. Mm-hmm. Now I use the clamp. And everybody's like, why do you use a clamp? That thing looks so stupid and everything. And I'm like, well, when you really think about it, it's really functional and I can fix it in the field if I need to.
Yep.
And, you know, instead of having a press to be able to spread your string and put a little loop through there and tie it, why not use the clamp? Yep. You know what I mean? So it's little things like that. Like right now I'm trying to find a quiver, the right quiver for the side of my bow. And it's like, I've been thinking about this for 3 weeks. What one do I want to get? Because it's gotta have some functionality, but it's also gotta be able to do what I need it to do.
Yeah.
So when I'm purchasing things, it's gotta be perform where I don't have to think about it, man. And I just know it's going to be there. It's like a point guard and a shooting guard. Yep. You know, they're going to be there even if you don't see them.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, man, I don't know how many times I've talked about this, but just like falling for the marketing. I was that guy too, man. I was like, oh, did you see this new bow? It says it's great. I got to do it. Oh, I need Sitka. Oh, look at everybody's got Sitka. I need Sitka. Oh, look at everybody's got First Light. I need some First Light, or I need this, and I need, or whatever. You enter popular brand, and I was the kind of guy, except for broadheads, you enter in the name of the brand. And like, I remember when Elite first came out and how their bows were supposed to be so different and awesome and things like that. And I started shooting them and yeah, they were good, but I really wasn't making the decisions on what I was shooting or my equipment based off of my personal needs. I was doing it because other people were saying how awesome it was. And mm-hmm. So it took me a handful of years, I would say somewhere around the 2016-17-18 time frame is when I started to just kind of step away and go, what works best for you? And that's when I started really focusing on like my arrow setup and where I was hunting, how I was hunting. I personally am not a huge, like, I like camo. Don't get me wrong. I think there's certain, you know, camo works great in certain situations, but I am more interested in what the gear will do for me as far as make me comfortable and keep me comfortable in the woods, not necessarily what the pattern is doing. I honestly don't think camo plays as big as a role to us as we think it does.
I agree. And, you know, I'm a Sitka wearer. Yeah. And I want to kind of go down this road too, because Sitka is, you know, it's the Lululemon of the hunting community, probably.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, for me, for Sitka, I
have. Oh, by the way, that is like not the toughest comparison, right? If you want to be like, no, yeah, what's tough? Well, you're the Lululemon of hunting equipment.
It's it probably is, you know, because how priced it is.
Right.
And I won't.
It's quality. It's quality.
That's the thing. Yeah. And I guess the point I'm looking or getting across is, you know, I don't wear it because X guy wears it. Yeah. I wear it because there's a couple things in my buying process. When I go to Sitka's website, I can filter and say whitetail, and it tells me what I need to buy.
Yep.
I'm the type of guy that I'll do research, but I want to know from the people that are building this, what is going to work best for me? Mm-hmm. Get me in the right direction. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And, you know, so I like that whole process, but also they have, whatchamacallit, they have kits, basically. They have a big game kit. They have a turkey kit. They have a whitetail kit. And, you know, it is marketing and everything, but I'm like, I can go in that whitetail section and be like, yeah,
it's a good starting point.
100%.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of the guesswork out of it. And honestly, Dan, it fits like a hug. Mm-hmm. Like, I love, and anything that's going to keep me in the tree longer. I'm sure First Light's the same way. I'm sure Kuyu is the same way. I'm sure whatever else is the same way. Just get with what you want and stop bitching if somebody uses Sitka or First Light or something like or whatever.
Yep.
Yep. You know?
Yep. Absolutely. You know, I really don't want to go down the camo rabbit hole because it just becomes talking in circles, right?
Yeah.
And just clothing in general, because I hated the marketing, so I decided to branch out and start going in different directions. And so Like I like how Huntworth has some solid options, and so I'll be working with Huntworth, and it's more affordable. And I think the quote some guy used the other day was, "It is 70% of 70 or 80% of Sitka as far as quality, but half the price." Mm-hmm. And so that's working man type numbers. You know what I mean? I like the fact that they have solid options, and so I'll be working with them a little bit this year. But anyway, that's beside the point. I think a lot of it has to do with what you're comfortable in.
My day kicks off with a refreshing Celsius energy drink, then straight to the gym. Pre-K pickup, back home to meal prep. Time for my fire station shift. One more Celsius, gotta keep the lights on. When the 3-alarm hits, I'm ready. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
And there's a whole bunch out there. Last handful of years, I've just been wearing like Dickies or mm-hmm. Carhartt pants, because I go through thorns and beggar's lice and cockaburs, and that just doesn't stick to that, like the fleece. Like I have a pair of Sitka fleece pants that I don't wear anymore because beggar's lice is so thick on it.
Mm-hmm.
So
I bet.
Yeah. Now we've talked about mature deer. Right? We talked about big-bodied deer. And so I want to talk a little bit about, I kind of want to focus on bow setup, arrow setup, rest, sight, and really end, like, because we could talk about boots, that's preference. We could talk about tree stands and saddles, that's preference. We could talk about ground blinds, that's preference. But there's a lot more science and numbers behind draw length and arrow weight and things that are technical that we could talk about with that, those kind of things. So when it comes to your bow, your arrow setup, maybe even some of your accessories, how are you picking that type of gear?
Same thing, man. As far as like the functionality, obviously has got to be there. It's got to feel good. Archery and to me, archery is all feel. Yes. It is, you know, when we were at ATA this last year, we were walking around and what I mean by we, David and I, and we picked up the Bowtech, and right when I picked it up, because I've heard a buddy who was like, man, I shot this thing before we went to ATA. He's like, you should shoot this thing. It's really good.
Their carbon one?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
I picked it up immediately right off the shelf and I looked at David, and you can ask him this. I put it right back down. I said, don't like it.
Yep.
I could already tell in the grip that I would not like that bow. I didn't have to shoot it. That's mm-hmm. just, it's all feel mm-hmm. from A to Z. It's got to feel good for me.
Right.
I shot Matthews for years. I've shot PSC in the past. I've shot Bear Archery in the past. Now I'm on to a Prime mm-hmm. and Prime. I shot their bow at ATA. And now like, so yesterday I was out shooting in the yard before tech and I was shooting at 89 yards. And I text David after I was done and I'm like, man, I've never had a bow hold at long distances like I have this set up with mm-hmm. my stabilizer set up and just how it holds. Mm-hmm. It holds so well and the draw cycle on it's so good. So archery for me is all about feel. If I can pick it up before I even shoot it and it feels good to me, and then shooting it, if it's, you know, good on release and everything, that's just a bonus to me.
Yeah.
Now, that whole process, it just the thing has to be sit it and forget it kind of deal. Like I just got to know it's going to be there and perform.
Yeah.
And that's what I look at going into that whole process.
Yeah. I'm just not a carbon bow guy. Like I don't care what brand makes it. I just don't like the way carbon bows feel mm-hmm. in my hand. I'm shooting this is the third year. I made the decision a couple weeks ago that I'm not going to get a new bow this year. I'm just going to replace the strings in my current bow. And it's a Bowtech solution, not the SS, but the Bowtech solution. Dude, I love that bow. It feels good in my hand. I love it at full draw. And that's where, like you were saying, I think that's the most important is, you know, some people will say, oh my God, the draw cycle just sucks on certain bows. But I'm not even thinking about that. Because when a deer steps out and you know you're going to shoot it, or there's a bedded mule deer or an elk coming your way, whatever it is, dude, do you think the draw cycle matters at that point? No. Dude, you're not even thinking about it. You're just like, wham, right? Like if it didn't have limb stops or the ability to stop, I'd rip the string right off the damn bow every time. Right. And so, for me, it's all about what it feels like at full draw. Mm-hmm. And if it feels comfortable and I feel solid, that's the kind of a bow that I like. But with that said, that the bow that I'm shooting right now has a really good draw cycle. I felt like in the past, certain bows don't have that. And when for some reason there's a correlation with bad draw cycle and then a ton of hand shock at the end. But again, that's not something that you're thinking about when you release the arrow on a deer. It's all about right. full draw, and then you let the arrow go. Hopefully the form and the practice you've done all summer has paid off. You got a glove on or it's cold. Like, are you going, oh my God, that I just shot this deer and the hand shock on this bow was so bad. Like, nobody's thinking about that at that time.
Right. So, I will say one thing I did. So in 2019, I shot a Matthews Vertix, loved it. Mm-hmm. In 2020, I think is when they came out with the bow they called the VXR. Mm-hmm. So and when the company I was with, we were partnered by Matthews. So we'd get Matthews bows every year, but going from, I'm not a big guy, you know, I'm like 5'10", 185 pounds, not a big guy, 28 inch draw. I like a 31 to a 32 inch draw. That VXR, if I remember right, was like a 33 inch draw. Mm-hmm. Every time I would grab it, I just felt like it was like a 35 or 36 inch bow. And I'm like, man, and what they designed.
Oh, you mean,
that bow at
you
the
mean
time,
ATA, axle to axle.
Axle to axle. Okay. Yes. All right. Yes. Yep. So like, and I think they designed that bow as the riser longer. So it felt, the riser was longer, not the ATA, but the riser was longer. So it would hold better at full draw. But man, every time I'd pull that bow back, I felt like I was holding on to an 8-foot 2x4. Mm-hmm. Like I just felt like it was so big. I ended up getting rid of that bow. Mm-hmm. And because I didn't like it. I found out that I live in that 31 to 32 inch ATA is where I need to be.
Exactly.
And, you know, when I went with the Prime Rev X, like they have different options. They have a 32, they have a 34 and a 36. I knew immediately I was going to like that 32, yep. And that's what I went with.
Yep. I shot a 30-inch axle-to-axle 1 year, and I liked it okay, but my accuracy is way better with a 33. Like, I feel real confident. I'm 6'1", I got a 30-inch draw length, and so I just felt confident with a longer axle-to-axle. I've never owned a Matthews bow.
Really?
Yep. Never have. And this is going to sound horrible. I've never, they trust me, they make great bows. They make great bows. But I met a guy a long time ago when I was looking for a bow, and he was a Matthews fanboy. And he acted like such a douchebag to me about all other, like, dude, you got to get a Matthews bow. You know, just like, he made it seem gross. And and to this day, it hasn't rubbed, like it hasn't left me. The thought of how that guy acted and how arrogant he was just a huge turnoff. And I think about that every time I go bow shopping.
Yeah. I can see that.
Yeah. All right. The topic of discussion that is happens a lot is arrow weight. And I'll just start off by saying, when I decided to up my arrow weight, I also saw improvements in my accuracy. And hand shock went away was lessened. And so I'm not talking overboard where I'm shooting a 200 grain broadhead, or a arrow weight that's like 600 something, You know, I'm not like a huge, I'm not a huge FOC guy. I'm more of a total arrow weight guy. And so when I jumped up from like 380 something to, I think I went 380 to like 4 something to now, I shoot a total arrow weight. I think it's 524 grains. I've noticed like that is my comfortable range. That is my confidence range is right there. And I feel like with the right head on that, like if I'm going to go elk hunting, I'd put a fixed blade on, fixed blade. Whitetails and mule deer, I'm going to shoot a mechanical. But that is what I feel comfortable in. And so far there's been nothing done once I moved up to that 524 range. As far as marginal shots and things like that, I'm getting pass-throughs, I'm getting deep penetration, and I feel very confident in that setup, so I'm going to continue to use it.
Yeah, and finding that comfort zone is huge. And 2 years ago, I started playing with different arrow weights, and actually, in 2019, I built my first, like, where I built them. I bought components from Ethics Archery, and I changed broadheads at that time, and I just ended up being around the 470 grains. Mm-hmm. And I just loved how it shot. Mm-hmm. So then, you know, the arrow craze comes even hotter, and it's like, oh, I got to go heavier, you know, because 470 is the light end of a heavy arrow, in my opinion. It's not like even 520 or wherever you're at, like, I really don't look at that as like a giant arrow. You know, when you start getting up to like 600 grains and higher, that's when I'm like, okay, that's a big arrow, you know? So I like that 470 range. Well, I messed around with, like, I got a 593 arrow, and then I got like a 520 and then a 470. Man, they, all of them shot well, but it was more of a personal preference. When I shot that 590, I was like, I literally don't think I could have shot over 40 yards without the deer hearing it, because it's just this stupid arc. And I'm like, I can't deal with that. Yeah. Like, I need the happy medium. 520 was a little better, but 470 is my sweet spot. It's a dart. It penetrates like crazy. Mm-hmm. I shoot a 125 head, all single bevel, fixed blade broadhead. It is my money spot. Yeah. 470 to 480 is where I'm going to live for eternity, because I think if I want to go elk hunting, I could use the same thing and just be just fine.
Yep. And it sounds to me like our numbers are very close. You add 2 inches onto your arrow when I'm at 30 and you said you're 28.
Yeah.
So we're sitting relatively, I might be 20 or 30 grains heavier at that point. But, you know, I also shoot most of the heads that I shoot, I'm trying to think, are 125. So I'm not shooting, no wait, a 100, excuse me. Yeah, 100 grain head. So, and I trust that head. That's the only product really I've strayed away from one time and then came back to it and still shoot it today. It's been like 13 mm-hmm. years shooting the same style heads. Let's see here. Arrow weight. Are you a 3-fletch or a 4-fletch guy?
3-fletch. It's a question I get a lot. I tested around with some 4-fletch. I didn't really care for them. Maybe I had something set up wrong, but it was just to the point where I'm like, okay, I tested it enough. I don't really feel comfortable with it. I'm going back to 3-fletch. So I'll be a 3-fletch forever.
Yeah. And that, whether this is accurate or not, I'm a 4-fletch guy. And in wind out west, supposedly 4-fletch is supposed to perform better. It's also supposed to stabilize the arrow in flight better because of the drag on the back end. And it may slow the arrow down a little bit, but I feel like that's giving me more accuracy. Mm-hmm. And so that with, so my, you match that with I shoot a day 6 arrow. Love that company. Love that, that arrow. And you match that with a 4-fletch and then a Wasp broadhead. Man, I feel like there's times where I feel like I'm shooting a crowbar down range because it's just
in a good way,
like,
though, right?
In a good way. Like, it's just, whoom, it's going. Mm-hmm. And this past year, along with, it's the first year I've ever really stopped and paper tuned and did cam timing with a bow technician at Shields in Coralville, Iowa. We took one day where we did all that stuff, and my bow was money. It's the first time I've ever had, you ever hear, just to hear a well-tuned bow, and it's just like, and it's, the bow just sounds tight, and it sounds efficient. And so I had that this year, and a lot of that has to do, I think, with not only the tuning to the arrow, but the arrow setup itself as well. And so I had everything really working for me, and I believe that's very important.
That's a great feeling when you have that, right? Yeah. And it's like you can just pick the bow up. I've been shooting a lot, just about every day recently, and you know, I just go down to my hunting room, pick my bow up, get my arrows, get the quiver or whatever, and I'm just like, I just know I'm going to go out there, and from 20 to 90, because with tack coming and everything, I'm like, I am dialed. I can kill anything right there if I need to. Like, I love that feeling.
Yeah. You feel dangerous walking into the woods.
You do.
And I tell you, it kind of comes back to that confidence that we talked about, man. Like, when you walk into the woods and you go, today is a bad day to be a deer, that makes you just a better hunter, right? I mean, you're at the moment of truth, you're just like, this guy's dead or this. And I haven't reached that type of comfortability or a comfort, I guess you would call it, until the last maybe 5 years. It took me a long time, and gear has a lot to do with it. So what heads are you shooting now? What'd you say for a head?
I shoot a Helix broadhead. So it's just a fixed blade, right bevel, single bevel head. They've been around for a long time. The FJ2 is just, you know, a single one blade, you know, and then this past ATA, they launched FJ4, which has bleeders, which I shot those with the prototypes last fall. I shot two deer with them, man.
Yeah,
just ridiculous. I think they're even more accurate than with the bleeders than without the bleeders.
Yeah,
and you get more blood with them, man. I have a broadhead I'm gonna shoot for the rest of my life. I really do. You know, and they do work with the podcast and everything like that. But honestly, I started shooting them because they reached out. I'm good friends with the marketing director, and he was like, "Hey, do you want to shoot some broadheads for this year and try them out for us?" Because it was a new thing for them. I'm like, "Sure." No partnership or nothing for that first year. And I'm like, okay, I'm onto something here. Let's do something. So that's the head I shoot.
It was in 2000 and what year was it? It would have been 2005. I got my finger cut off. I got money from insurance. And so when I got back to Iowa, after moving back there from Alabama, I went to Shields and I bought a brand new Bowtech Tribute. I bought arrows, and the first when I would call an official first upgrade, because I was shooting like some hand-me-down bow, some Bear or an Oneida. I used to shoot an Oneida. The first pack of broadheads I ever bought with my own money was in late 2005 or 2006 was Wasp jackhammers, and so that's a Made in America head, and I have killed so many deer with that head, that specific head, more than any other broadhead combined. And it's just something that the blood trails that I've had, the straight damage that it does on marginal shots. And that's really what it comes down to, in my opinion, is you take your arrow and your broadhead, and you take my broadhead, you put it through the lungs or the heart, dead animal. The true test of a good broadhead comes when you gut shot it or ham it, or, you know, is that broadhead doing a ton of damage on marginal shots? And if it's slowing the deer down or stopping the deer with that marginal shot, that's a good broadhead to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I did test that out, not on purpose, by any means, not on purpose. I shot a deer in 2021. No. Yes. 2021. I'm sorry. And I hit him back and I gut shot him. And, he never, It took me a while to find him, but I did find him, and he, you know, it was a big ordeal, but it performed. The broadhead performed. I shot another deer that earlier that year, completely full frontal. Mm-hmm. And with my arrow set up, like I told you, it's 470 grains with 125 grain head, 28 inch draw, only shooting 65 pounds. I shot him right in the chest, you know, right, like, and came down, and the arrow had 6 inches of the arrow when I walked up to him was sticking out between his legs and went through the whole cavity.
Yeah.
You know, and right then and there, I'm like, that's a 240 pound deer. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, right then I'm like, this thing is ridiculous. And yeah. that was only the single blade. It wasn't like the, you know, the bleeders. And yeah. I'm like,
yeah,
this thing is ridiculous.
And that's what my true testament came in 2018 for. And this is not necessarily about broadhead, but heavy arrow and heavy arrow plus fixed blade. I don't know if I would have got the penetration on a mechanical, probably just based off, you know, physics. No, I wouldn't have, but I had a Boss four blade on. That's my fixed blade of choice. And so I drew back and I hit the deer. It was in his ham because he was hard quartering away. It was a shot that you know, like we talked about it last time. I'm pretty aggressive on my shot, but it is a shot I probably should have rethought about taking. Mm-hmm. My arrow saved me on that though. So I was able to shoot the deer, go through the ham, go through all the guts, and go pop the diaphragm. I think I hit very low opposite side lung, and it came out his armpit. And so another mechanical with my 2021 buck, similar to you, I shot right in the chest, and it was a mechanical. And so I had a huge damage there. And I shoot a 32 inch arrow. I believe it is.
Wow.
Yeah. I think it's 32. I mean, I got a 30 inch draw. So yep. So it's a 32 inch arrow. And so what is it? 32 inches. And I think 4 inches were sticking out. I got 28 inches of penetration with that mechanical and that arrow set up. And that was another time where I was just like, damn, like, I know I'm shooting the right stuff right now.
Right. Yeah. And that just goes back to the confidence too. Yeah. When you see that kind of stuff, it's like, man, you almost feel a little invincible. Like I feel invincible. Like I could, and it's almost to a fault, because mm-hmm. it's like you might start thinking like, I can start pressing the envelope a little bit. I can take just any shot I want. Well, you got to do it within reason too. Yeah. You know, you don't want to be taking shots straight up the old hind end or anything like that. But right. I mean, do it with what you have confidence in, but don't overstep thinking that you're invincible as far as like taking very marginal shots.
Yeah.
You know?
Yep. Absolutely. Another thing that I went, and there's no test that I've done. It's confidence. I went from a cable driven rest to now I'm shooting a Vapor Trail limb driven rest. And I think I'm getting way better accuracy with that with a limb driven drop away rest than with the cable driven that I was shooting previous.
Yeah, I used to shoot the Vapor Trail limb driven. I've still got one on my another bow. Mm-hmm. It's a great rest. Honestly, it's very easy to tune. Mm-hmm. It's very easy to work. I guess it's full capture as well. Mm-hmm. But if I have any beef on it, and this is not much beef, is on like a spot and stalk kind of thing, my arrow will still move around
quite a bit. Yeah.
Quite a bit. Yeah. Now with my QAD, it doesn't move around as much, mm-hmm. but it still does. But like I said, go back to that, like, you know, I have had on that Vapor Trail on like a spot and stalk situation, have it ding around and hit the bottom of my sight, maybe on my QAD. I haven't had that issue. That's not why I switched. Reason why I switched is because I had the Vapor Trail set up on one bow and I had a QAD on another bow, and I just started using the QAD, and they're both really good rests.
Yeah. Yeah. I get 100% what you're talking about. I just put my finger over top of the arrow when I'm when I'm stalking. But I know exactly what you mean by that. And so when it comes to price, here's how I approach it. If I was in golf, if I was a golfer too, or if I was in stamp collecting or whatever the extracurricular activity is, and hunting, then I would have a split budget, right? And so I would have to be very cautious of what I spend if I am personally going all out into different categories. And I'm a, you know, hey, I'm a golfer and I also like to go to baseball games, and I don't want to do shit except go hunt, right? We go on vacations and things like that. But what I'm getting at here is those day six arrows, they're, in my opinion, they are the best arrow that is made in the industry. They don't sponsor this show at all. They don't do any sponsoring, I don't think. And they are probably some of the most expensive arrows as well on the market. But I look at that and I go, it's my only thing. Like, hunting is my only thing. So I want to have the best equipment for what I can afford, right? Back in the day, if I was, you know, 26-year-old version of me, I wouldn't have been able to afford that. It would have been out of my price range. But now I make the money. I make enough money. They last me a couple years, and I'm confident in them. And so I'm the type of person who pays more for confidence and, and that kind of stuff. So I look at some of the prices and how people break it down. Like, I feel like, especially in the hunting industry, that price does reflect quality.
I agree. Definitely. I agree. I will say, talking about the arrow thing, I think one of the best arrows for like a budget arrow, I would call, is a gold tip, like XT Hunter arrow. You know, I've shot those things forever. Not that expensive. They work really well. I don't have any affiliation with Gold Tip, but that is like a good budget arrow. But I agree, like you're going to get what you pay for. And honestly, since I started the podcast, like the podcast can fund a lot of my like equipment that I need or I'm trying to use. So it's a little easier for me to buy things now than just using like the family money. Yeah. But I will say, like, I squeak when I walk. I'm so cheap. And like, I'll bitch about it. Like, man, I could figure out reasons why I need that, but I'll bitch about it for like 3 weeks. Then it's like, all right, just swipe the card and then I'll buy it. Yep. You know what I mean? And it's like, why don't you just have the mentality of buy once, cry once? And that's kind of where I'm getting to is like, you can really find a use for it. And really it's going to help me. Buy once, cry once, I'll buy it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and that's why I feel like the message when it comes to gear is very simple. Find something that you're comfortable with. Find something that is in your budget. Me and you, we're both cry once, buy once type guys. Outside of that, man, it shouldn't be stressful to go buy hunting equipment and figure out what bow you should buy. It should be fun. It's the process for me is fun. Like, I like going and shooting bows and going, ooh, what's the difference between this one and the other one? What's, you know, all this stuff. And so I have fun in the process. I enjoy that type of thing. I try not to stress out. However, I did stress out. I was stressing out, like, do I buy this e-bike or not? What do I do? Should I get this e-bike?
Let me stop you real quick.
Yeah. Are you gonna talk shit on e-bikes?
No.
Okay.
Dan, I want an e-bike, but I will not spend the money for an e-bike. An e-bike will get me in areas. I can tell you 10 pros that to one con that why I need an e-bike and how it will help me. I refuse to pay the full price for an e-bike.
I'm going to say something to you right now, and then I'm going to stop talking.
Okay.
When I went to South Dakota this year, I usually either hike a mile in, set up camp, then hike another mile or mile and a half to a glassing spot and set up. Or I walk a mile in from my truck or however, you know, usually the mile's the cutoff or maybe a mile and a half somewhere. Then you set up and then you go can go a little bit deeper. Dude, I went in 6.5, almost 7 miles with my e-bike in the same amount of time it took me to walk 1, maybe 2 miles. It is worth it. But you got the caveat there is you got to make sure that the land that you want to hunt on has certain, like, what the rules and regulations are for e-bikes.
Okay? Right.
First
right.
and foremost.
Yeah.
But the benefit of them, especially on my new farm that I had in Iowa, deer, the access to the main part of the farm is through one gate. And when I would walk in there, the deer on the ridge would see me. When I drove my e-bike in there, they just went like this. They just looked at me, and then they went back to doing what they were doing. And it got me the opportunity to get in without spooking deer. And, dude, it's worth
it. Okay, tell me this, though. I'm going to play devil's advocate here. Now, this is where I'm at with it.
Okay.
Okay, so an e-bike, let's just say modestly, you're going to be spending like $3,000 for a bike. Okay.
Yes.
Now, I get it. It has, you know, pedal assist and all that stuff, and you don't have to pedal as much. I understand that. I have a really nice pedal bike, like a mountain bike. Okay.
Yeah.
I was going to go down the road of decking that thing out with everything I need, with racks, everything. So the only benefit I don't have is the motor. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I don't mind pedaling. My thing is, and what I could be doing is, like you said, like one of my farms, we have to pull in like halfway to the farm and I blow a lot of deer out.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying park at the road and bike back. So tell me this, if you had a pedal bike and did the same thing, are you saying because it's an e-bike, they do that? Or would a pedal bike be the same thing?
A pedal bike would give you the same result as far as spooking deer is concerned.
Yep. Okay.
The only issue is I'm not pedaling 6 miles back. It would actually be harder to ride a bike than to walk that 6 miles because you're going like this. You're probably having to pick your bike up at times or push it up a hill. When the e-bike, I pedal, and then the motor helps me, you know, assist me. The pedal assist, right?
Yep.
I have to disconnect the throttle when I'm on public land because then it becomes a higher class of bike. And then it's considered a motorized vehicle. But when you disconnect the throttle, then it becomes a bicycle. And so as long as you are putting in effort, then the motor kicks in. You're still putting in the effort. And then under the law, it's still considered a pedal type
I got you.
Bike. So whatever.
Yeah. And for me, I would go spend $200 on accessories to deck up my mountain bike, then, and I could do that 10 times to equal that $3,000.
Right.
you know, so that's where my head was at.
Right. Full disclosure, I also have a really good friend who works at the e-bike company that I bought it from. And so I got a 50% employee discount. So there's that too, right?
Yeah.
So there's that. So anyway, I'm telling you, I used to be that guy years ago where like I'd see an advertisement for an e-bike. I'm like, who the hell can afford an e-bike?
Yeah.
Like late 20s, early 30s year old version of me. And now the benefits of it are huge. So the downfall, not cheap. The upfall, everything. So I just have to make sure I don't get too fat so that I don't break the weight limit on it. Things like that. So other than that, any other tips, tricks, tactics, thoughts about gear?
No, I'm just going to reiterate just, you know, the confidence. Find stuff that you have confidence in. And for instance, like I have a release I've been shooting for 13 years.
Yeah.
And everybody else is shooting these nice thumb buttons and back tensions. Mm-hmm. Mine literally is a true fire, like hardcore buckle full back.
Yep.
And the thing is dependable.
Yep.
Like it's stuff like that. It's not sexy by any means.
Mm-hmm.
You walk up to a line, you're shooting next to guys at a 3D course. They're going to look at you like, why aren't you shooting the aluminum UV, like shoot it self release? Well, because I don't need to spend $800 on a release, and this one works fine.
Yeah.
So find out what is, you know, best for your confidence. Get stuff that simplifies it for you, and mm-hmm. Have fun.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, my man. Well, appreciate another talk here on the Fall Sessions. Man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to do this. And I guess we'll talk to you next time.
Sounds good, Dan.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.